ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Out to deep cover, misfield, and the ball goes away for four runs, and that's the game. Australia have won this game by 5 wickets. Carey hits the winning runs. He embraces Cameron Green. This has been a stunning performance by Australia to win the series 4-1.
18 days of play, 5 tests, Australia 4, England 1. That's the top-level summation. But how do you think we are going to remember a clash that Brendan McCullum described pre-summer as the series of our lives? The unravelling of Bazball, the ascension of Travball, the coronation of Mitchell Starc. How will we remember it? And what comes next for both teams? I'm Patrick Stack. This is ABC Sport Daily. Ben Cameron has covered this entire series from the ABC commentary box. He is at the SCG. Ben, how do you think we're going to reflect on this series? I mean, it started shaped by Bazball. Has it been the disavowing of a cricket philosophy? Is that ultimately the epitaph of this Ashes series?
Well, it sounds like Brendan McCullum and even possibly Rob Key will survive. So maybe not.
I'd love to carry on because I feel like we've got some steps to take and we've got some things that we can improve on, some areas which, even if we had won the series 5-0, you'd still look at an evolution of what you need to do and some areas which would be highlighted that you need to improve on. And as a coach, that's what you try and do.
Once again, it was an English team that was ill-equipped to come down under and compete with what has been really an all-conquering Australian team that has a very experienced core, albeit one that had to do it by committee this time with 16 players used over the Ashes series.
Yeah, a little bit more on the Australians in a moment. It sounds as though you get the sense there won't be dramatic changes to the English setup, but do you think that there might be something less dramatic, maybe tweaks along the way?
Well, I think clearly Brendan McCullum needs support, doesn't he? He needs a full-time bowling coach or someone to help him there. I think clearly they need to sort out the selection process. Darren Lehman, who worked with us, said that as Northamptonshire coach, he hasn't seen a selector at a game the whole time he's been there coaching last year. So I think clearly they need to formalise that process. It can't just be Brendan McCullum, Ben Stokes, Luke Wright and Rob Key given carte blanche to pick the team as they see fit. There needs to be a connection between county cricket and this English national setup that gives them the best chance of performing moving forward.
In a sentence, when England next return, Jacob Bethel will probably be central, but in a sentence, will Stokes and Root be playing for England?
You'd have to think not. So, I mean, technically the next time England return, they may well be because that will be the 150th anniversary test in March of next year. So there is a good chance that they'll still be in the English team for that. But I know you're speaking specifically about the Ashes, and I think the next time they come around, Joe Root's maybe, Ben Stokes, I think, absolutely not. I'd love to see Joe Root again, but batsmen generally have their peak between the ages of sort of 30 and 34. He's had that the last 3, 4, 5 years.
Out through points, and Root brings up the 150. He's going big on Australian turf. England fans and Australians rising to their feet to acknowledge a legend of the game.
But the cliff can come really quickly as well, which we've seen with so many champions in the game.
From an Australian perspective, the standouts have been Alex Carey, Travis Head, and ultimately Mitch Starc, who was named Man of the Series. Who do you feel as though shone brightest for you amongst those three?
Well, it's a fascinating discussion, right? So I think Mitchell Starc was absolutely the player of the series, and the series was won in the first 11 days of play, and that was with how Mitchell Starc bowled in the first 3 test matches when he didn't have his running mates in Pat Cummins and Josh Hazlewood. He put the attack on his back, wore the Superman cape.
Here is Starc, left arm over, and he's got him! He has bowled Stokes. Off stump, knocked back. Stokes is so frustrated. A brilliant partnership comes to an end. Starc with the new ball, gets his man.
But it's interesting when you look back at the series, his influence, it was sort of spread out. You remember a lot of the moments, and I think the moments that I'll immediately recall will be Travis Head's knock on day 2 of the first test.
And now he's 1 run away, field still spread, Atkinson to him, he backs away, pops it up on the offside and gets through for the single. It's a counter-attacking 100 from the makeshift opener. He salutes the pavilion. A test turning 100 for Travis Head.
It'll be Joe Root breaking through for that maiden test ton. It'll be Alex Carey with his emotional century in Adelaide. And Jacob Bethel, a star, is born here in Sydney.
Webster comes in, bowls to Bethel. He does go down the ground and smashes him away into the leg side. That's the way to do it. And Jacob Bethel reaches his first test century. And for all the England supporters who have watch this with broken hearts over the last few months. This is the future.
So those will be sort of the iconic moments that I remember. I'm not sure I'll remember the spread of Mitchell Starc's contribution.
That they won this series with so little from Cummins, Lyon, Hazelwood. It felt like in some ways a little bit of a window to the future. I mean, how would you expect this Australian team to evolve with a cluttered schedule that comes from August on with series against Bangladesh, South Africa, New Zealand, India in early 2027, and then, of course, the Ashes feels like it's just around the corner.
Well, they're going to have to rejuvenate this team because, you know, the Quicks and Nathan Lyon are going to come to the end very, very quickly. I think the key questions at the moment is whether Weatherald remains at the top. And if he doesn't, that means they need to find an opener with Travis Head, and they need to find a number five. So someone else to come into the middle order, or if Travis Head goes back to number five, they need two openers. And then possibly they need to work out, depending. I mean, you'd expect Nathan Lyon to be ready for the top end series in August, but they need to work out who the next spinner is. Is it Matthew Kuhneman? Is it Corey Roccaccioli? Is it Todd Murphy, who was there for this series? Those are all the questions they need to work out. But the regeneration is going to come. You're right.
Emotional scenes at the Sydney Cricket Ground today for Usman Khawaja as he farewelled Test cricket. It was a sight to behold.
So here we go. We're going to get applause for Usman Khawaja. He comes onto the field for the last time in his Test career. A bunch of photographers following him. Smith gives him a tap on the back as he goes. And they might even, from the look of it, form a guard of honour for Usman Khawaja as he makes his way out to the middle of the SCG.
He is the only retiree in a series where we thought there potentially might be others. I mean, when David Warner departed, we kind of found that there was an ever-rotating cast to try and fill his spot at the top of the order. You've touched on Jack Weatherald. I wonder how much extra headaches we're going to see at the top there when you consider Weatherald has a big question mark. And Travis Head kind of does also, Ben.
Yeah, so fascinatingly, it'll be George Bailey as the chairman of selectors, one of the key selectors who will make a call on Jack Weatherald. And George Bailey played 5 test matches for Australia. They were all in the Ashes, in one Ashes series, that he was gone. Jake Weatherald might face the same fate. Darren Lehman spoke about the fact that we're going to South Africa next. Those are quick, bouncy wickets that seam as well. First innings of a test match, and this was first forecast by Phil Jakes when Travis Head went to the top. That's not going to suit Travis Head, whether Australia bat first or second. That's going to be a tough time for him. Third and fourth innings, when the pitch is a bit flatter, even if it's slightly deteriorating, when he gets a new ball instead of an old ball, it will really suit him at the top. He'll be able to whack them and take them on, and he will score a lot of important runs like that for Australia. So Darren Lehman's gone as far to say, I would not open with him in the first innings, but I would in the second innings. But that might be a little funky, he said. He understands that. So, it's going to be fascinating whether he settles at the top or goes back down to five.
Cameron Green, it hasn't been a happy series for him.
Tong moves in, full-edged. Did it carry? Harry Brooks says yes, it did. And Tong wheels away in celebration. And Green is walking. He's off. Another low catch taken by Brook in the slips. England are keeping their hopes alive. It's another low score from Green. Naught in the first innings, 7 in the second.
He has had to carry the weight of Golden Boy all-rounder. Many have found that pressure too much over the journey in the history of Australian cricket. And while it's clear Green's ceiling is sky high, is there something kind of revealing about the fact that a seasoned pro, Bo Webster, a guy with a sensational body of work and consistency, has ultimately outperformed him here in Sydney?
So a couple of things on this. It's hard for us to criticise the Australian team without a or accuse them of not having a level of foresight to the future, which we often do. He's the only player in his 20s in the team. But then they continue to back this guy in and say, we need to develop him. So it'd be disingenuous to be too critical of that fact. But we were discussing this in the box today, and I was chatting to Jason Gillespie. It does feel a little bit like the sunk cost fallacy for the Australian selectors. They've invested too much in Cameron Green, they feel, to turf him out of the side at the moment, so they continue to back him in. It feels like maybe now is the time that he needed to go out of the side and rediscover his best form. They could have played Bo Webster in his place in this test. Then they could have picked a spinner as well. That probably would have been a more balanced side, just in my opinion. But he could go back and play the back end of the Shield summer and get himself hopefully going again as a red ball cricketer, so that when we next play maybe some county cricket in the off-season, so that when we play in August, he is back being the player we know he can be.
Just finally, for all of the excitement, the adulation that we throw at our star cricketers, Andrew McDonald has flown relatively under the radar. How much credit does he deserve when you consider this to be a series that was ultimately framed around Bazball, and it's been a very different style of cricket or a different style of preparation that has ultimately proved triumphant?
Yeah, he deserves a lot. I mean, Corbin Middlemass on the ABC Cricket Podcast has posed the question about whether he could be our greatest ever test coach by the end of his tenure with Australia, or the greatest ever coach, not just test coach, with what they've won in the white ball formats as well. So he deserves a lot of credit. The interesting point is, with his tenure, it's tied into what we were speaking about, the forecast and working towards the future and planting some trees for tomorrow. Warren Buffett always says someone today is sitting in the shade of a tree someone planted many years ago. So he will only be judged on the here and now. But does he have the energy? Does he have the desire? Does he rejuvenate this team so that we are well-placed in 1 year, 2 years, 3 years, 4 years, when this group goes at the moment? I tend to think he will go with this group. So I think this group is all wedded together. And I don't just mean the players. I mean Pat Cummins. I mean Andrew McDonald. I mean George Bailey. I think there's a good chance that this core will likely all depart at a very similar time, and there will be a complete rejuvenation, clearing of the halls of this Australian cricket team.
Ben Cameron, thanks for pulling apart what has been a sensational Ashes series. Appreciate it.
Anytime, Pat.
Headlines. In the BBL, fans were absolutely wowed by a teenage sensation, Ollie Peake, who hit a six from the final delivery of the game to see the Renegades down the Scorchers in Perth.
Hardy bowls to Peake. He goes high. He hits the six. The Renegades have won. Ollie Peake, the young master. Incredible moment for this future superstar of Australian cricket.
There was earlier controversy with the Victorian recalled after being caught by Ashton Turner. The fielder held the ball into the ground as he completed the catch, and it was ruled illegitimate. In the AFL, the biggest story of the off-season has been two-time Brownlow medalist Lachie Neale stepping down from the Brisbane captaincy after the breakdown of his marriage. Coach Chris Fagan has addressed that news and the reality that Neale may need to move back to Perth as a consequence at the conclusion of this season.
But if he chooses to move back to Perth because he needs to be close to his children, then he'd do that with our blessing. Like, you know, we're sort of not going to hold anyone to ransom. We'll just go along with the flow on that.
Two-time world aerials champion Australian Laura Peel is warming up for the Olympics, delivering her best performance of the season, topping the podium at the World Cup event in Canada. And Trae Young, the Atlanta Hawks star and teammate of Australian Dyson Daniels, has been traded to the Washington Wizards. Young was moved during the game, and he left the arena in some dramatic scenes. I'm Patrick Stack. This is ABC Sport Daily, produced by Poppy Penny.
Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.